Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for December 27th, 2009. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, Merry Christmas, everybody.
And welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, yes. Well, I hope everybody did have a good Christmas Eve and Christmas. Did y'all?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Quiet.
Yeah. Well, that makes three of us pretty much, because it's the 26th when things started to go downhill. Went over to Birmingham for the first time in, well over a decade. That part of the family usually been meeting in South Atlanta, or south of Atlanta. But we met in Birmingham for the first time in a while, and we're traveling back. And by the way, my kids had done wonderful. My foster daughter, first time. She has met many people in that family. I mean, they were just perfect. Great time. We get about 5 to 7 minutes away from the house, and my son has been saying, I'm not feeling too good. And he says, oh, slow down, slow down. And I slow down the car. I mean, I pull off on a gravel part, and I mean, I'm sliding, but trying to get pulled over in time. Go to open the, you know, get the windows unlocked so you can open them. Too late. It is not good in the back seat, I'll put it that way. But that was the 26th, so it wasn't on Christmas, but it was just a strange ending. So it meant that we were up until late in the morning because, you know, you got to take care of those kind of problems right off instead of going to bed. But just a crazy story. Any crazy stories like that for y'all?
No.
A little calmer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
I wanted
yeah.
Trivial Pursuit. That was a big deal.
Hey, sometimes that's good. I've had family gatherings where winning at board games is the highlight. I mean, you know,
there was one thing. I must have taken leave of my senses. I bought my wife a portable karaoke machine for Christmas. God help us all. Okay, that's all I can say, okay?
I've never been to that family party, but I've been to that party, Tim, and it is an interesting time when people get to go to the karaoke machine. Well, I guess, you know, it's that time of year where it's holiday, so I thought we'd kind of start off a little light. But we can get into some politics, because even though this is usually one of the deadest weeks of the year, there was a lot of politics in the South particularly for us to talk about. And then there was, of course, a huge national political story, which affects every part of the country. We'll talk about it too. But I guess where I want to start is on Karen Handel. I believe it was Wednesday. Made a bold move. She may have made it late on Tuesday, but it was on my front page of the paper on Wednesday. She decided that she's effective the 31st of December. She's going to resign her office as Secretary of State and run for governor full time. Catherine, what's your thought on that?
Well, I think, I think it's good in this sort of in terms of good for democracy that she is not going to be in charge of the election for her position. I mean, I think that's, you know, good for democracy. I think it was a nice Christmas gift for Sonny Perdue and the Democratic and the GOP in Georgia, because they can place someone in that office that then should be in a pretty good position to run for the office during the election. So I think it's, you know, it's good for the GOP, but I also think it is good for ultimately good for the citizens.
Yeah, I think it was a real strong move on her part, and I'll get into more why. But Tim, your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad she did, and the reason is now she can't change her mind if she don't like the look of her poll numbers.
Yep.
And stay in the Secretary of State's office. She's all in. And so now I hope she loses the nomination, and we're rid of her. That being said, I'm going to imagine that Governor Perdue's pretty happy to be able to appoint his own person. And you know, David, don't you, that he has somebody already handpicked for this position.
Well, you would think, and you think he even probably got a heads up on this, since people say that Sonny Perdue is tied closest to Karen Handel of the candidates. I'll tell you, I just think it's a real strong move. I think it looks like, you know, basically what we're saying, with all the scandal, it sets her up the best of any of the candidates, Republican-wise, to take advantage of the scandal, not that she becomes the strongest candidate overall. But,
well, what are you saying, that she can run now as the outsider?
Well, I don't know the outsider-insider garbage really works. I think some of that kind of stuff gets overplayed, because obviously if you've been down at the Capitol for 4 years in her case, I mean, really, you're not that much of an outsider. But it's that now she can run full-time, and more importantly, she can raise money full-time, because I don't think she's as flush with cash as, say, John Oxendine and maybe Nathan Deal. And Nathan Deal was going to be able to raise money anyway, so looking at those two as maybe one, two, three in some order, she has to play catch-up with Oxendine, who will, if he doesn't resign, be forced to, you know, take a little hiatus from fundraising. And then Deal won't have those restrictions, and therefore he would then could take a lead, and she'd be number three by a mile in the money race. And now she's not in that position. And so it really, you know, it's going all in. And I think it was a good move for her, because if you're going to, you know, file, you know, in April and not run for reelection in your other office and run for governor anyway, it's where you're going. So why not do it? Now, of course, the intriguing part of who gets appointed, I'm actually going to have to look. I'm trying to pull up a few things for part of the show, but I want to look at the Republican candidates and see if we think any of those folks are somebody Sonny Perdue appoints, or is there another person that Sonny Perdue could appoint, and would that person then jump in the race? Or does somehow, you know, somebody gets appointed as a placeholder or a favor? Is there some, you know, Sonny Perdue person he just loves and wants him to go down in history as a Secretary of State for, you know, roughly a year? What happens out of that? Looking at the candidates that are currently Republicans, you have Brian Kemp, you have Doug McGinty, and that appears to be it. And Jeff Lewis is listed as somebody that may be interested in running, but he's not in office right now. I don't know that he's a Sonny Perdue ally. Those are the only three listed people. Do y'all know any relations or ties between Brian Kemp and Sonny Perdue?
I don't. Not really. I don't think they've ever been particularly tight. Is there a possibility that a candidate would drop from another race into this race because it suddenly is now wide open with Karen Handel completely out of the picture? That also is a possibility, but who would that be?
And it was already, but then, Tim, it was already kind of, you know, opened, if you will. Doug McGinty.
Well, no, because she could have decided.
Yeah, I was still thinking that she might, if she didn't like her poll numbers, decide not to run. That possibility was always there.
Well, let me ask you something. Could she decide after the session or at some point that she wants to run for Secretary of State again?
Well, she could, but then that would be so indecisive. That would be
indecisive. But, I mean, she could do it.
And it would put it at risk. She wouldn't have incumbent next to her name now. That would really be a weird deal. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. But she could legitimately do that.
Yeah, she is betting all the marbles now on making a runoff. That's what she's doing.
I had one other thought about this today. You know, there's often comparisons between Karen Handel and Sarah Palin, at least on this show and in my house. And this sort of sets, you know, if she does not prevail in the governor's race, then she has one unfinished term in her resume, and which is, you know, sort of the Sarah Palin way, you know, quit and run for something else. So I wonder what that could mean in the long term of her political career.
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, as far as the Palin analogy, I think even though she doesn't have a college degree and that she used against her, I do think she's a little sharper than Sarah Palin.
Do you
and
really?
As far as the quitting, I mean, that kind of gets tricky, okay? Well, but then people could say, oh, Barack Obama, he quit on his last two offices. He didn't finish his term as U.S. Senator, and he didn't finish his term as state senator. Well, that's a bunch of bull. I mean, and it's really bull on Karen Handles. I mean, she ran for county commissioner and then moved up to secretary of state. Now she's moving up. That quitting kind of deal, I don't know. It's not like the office is going to go unfilled.
Right, I know. I'm just.
I think it's a kind of thing that yes, somebody is going to mention it against her, but I don't know how effective it's going to be. Also, the other Republican candidate is Doug McGinty, a city councilman, who's from Sandy Springs, which is basically just a suburban town of Atlanta. And when you try to go to his site about running for Secretary of State, it comes up to nothing. Well, there it came up the second time. But anyway, this fella, I don't see this fella as the guy that Sonny Perdue's going to get behind exactly either.
Well, with Karen Handel, David, it's simple. I believe either she is the next governor of Georgia or her political career is over.
Really?
I believe that's the way it is. That got a lot of excitement.
Or her statewide career, it's not like she can run again in 4 years for something pretty
big. No, she's burned the bridges. She has burned the bridges. Either she is elected governor, like I said, she's all in, or she's done.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know about that.
I mean, but people can always kind of go back. I mean, I've heard about, past nominees for governor running for mayor of this and things like that.
She might could go back to a lower office, but never again on a statewide level would she. That's just not the way things seem to happen in the state of Georgia.
I agree. She's pushed it. She's pushed it up. I mean, and I actually like the move. I actually kind of respect the move. I think it's what you got to do is, go for this because in her fundraising position. She's nowhere close fundraising-wise, according to what I've heard, although I guess the big report will come out next time. And see, that's the thing. Even if she had a bad quarter, half year, whatever they're filing at this point, she can always say, oh, it's no big deal because I'm going to be able to race full-time in the state of Georgia because she can say, oh, well, Nathan Deal's out of the state.
She's got to do another thing that she couldn't do in the Secretary of State's office. And that is, she's got to physically get out of Atlanta and start campaigning in person around the state and introduce herself to these Republican activists that are going to help to select the nominee. And she could not do that sitting in the Secretary of State's office in Atlanta. And she is taking a calculated gamble now that she can do this. And achieve one of the top two spots, and I've got to agree with you overall, David. I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds like it's 3-for-3 then. But we do think it's a solid move. Now, I did hear, speaking of the governor's race, I did hear that one of the candidates, Jeff Chapman, may actually get out of this race pretty soon because I think he's looking at terrible fundraising numbers, and once again, he's a state senator. It's going to have no ability to fundraise between now and qualifying. And I don't know that really affects the race. I mean, if anything, he's siphoned off of the Tennessee, like say Johnson, since they're, from the same part of the state and both state senators. Had y'all heard that rumor? Had y'all read it?
No.
And is it even worth reading? You know what I mean? I mean, is it even a factor, y'all think?
No.
No. I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's kind of, it's just, yeah, I think we could have all the same take on that. This is, in my mind, this is kind of a, deal handle, Oxendine, and then possibly Eric Johnson kind of race. Unfortunately, even though I like Austin Scott the best out of the crew, I just don't even think he's even that much of a factor in the race. So it's those four. To kind of divide things up, and it's who can get the top two, because I do think it's going to go to a runoff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's what look at the governor's race on the Republican side. No real news on the Democratic side. Anything that I missed in the past week?
No, we're still sitting about where we were with Governor Barnes depending on which poll you see, high 30s to mid 40s with Thurbert Baker, depending on which poll you look at, anywhere from 15 to 30%. The others languishing under 5%.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's no real news there on that side because, you know, there's only one candidate. Well, I guess two candidates that can't fundraise, and that's Baker and Porter. The other two are going to be free to do whatever they want as far as fundraising and campaign in the state, being General Poitras and former Governor Barnes. So we're kind of in a holding pattern on that side. And then I guess switching to another state, kind of bad news for the Democratic Party in a way, although I think once we talk it through it may not be as bad seeming. I guess it was Tuesday. I got a text, first one I'd ever gotten from Tim Shiflett, that the Alabama congressman in Alabama 5, I want to say Bud Kramer, but that's the person he replaced, Parker Griffith, switched parties. And I was pretty surprised, even though he wasn't a great dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, I was still surprised that he did that. Tim, were you real shocked?
Not a huge surprise. He might as well switch. He voted this year with the Republicans on every major issue. He voted against the TARP. He voted against the stimulus. He was right down the line opposed to any health care bill. He had even recently stated that he would not vote for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker anymore. Well, gee, there goes the one and last thing he would have voted for. You know, it's one of those deals where he's looking at it from a political thing and thinking, well, if I want to be reelected, I think I need to do it in Alabama in this district as a Republican. In a district that John McCain carried handily and that he carried barely in a Democratic tsunami. He is he's a political ostrich that was stuck his head up and he's sniffing the winds. And to him, the winds are blowing toward the Republicans. So he jumped ship. He may be the only one. There may be one or two more. Generally, these guys wait till after the election, but I think this guy really thinks, David, that if he doesn't switch, now he's not going to be reelected.
Yeah, Catherine, you weren't. It sounds like you weren't as surprised either.
I wasn't that surprised. You know, you look at his voting record, you look at his district, it's not a big surprise. I mean, he really wasn't probably a Democrat to begin with. He just ran as a Democrat.
Right. Amen.
So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he didn't understand Washington as much. I was a little surprised in that, you know, a lot of times these guys switch parties back in the 90s. And, you know, they had been in office for, you know, congressman from the South for, 10 years, 12 years. And then the Democratic Party with Bill Clinton took power. And then, you know, things kind of changed on them a little bit. And, you know, and of course Fox News and talk radio came along. And it was kind of like the ground shifted a little bit. And it's not an excuse for those folks and what they did, but they switched parties. But this guy ran in 2008, the same year the president won. It's kind of like he ran in the circumstances in which he's now serving in. You know, and without the president running, he probably wouldn't have won at all. So it's kind of, to me, it's like he knew what he was getting into, if you will. I mean, you know, if he's saying, oh, the Democrats, you know, he knew what he was getting into. So, therefore, I just think it's a little more inexcusable. But then, of course, I'm looking at
I'm not saying it's excusable. It's not surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I did remember the comment, you know, recent weeks that he wouldn't vote for Nancy Pelosi, which, of course, that speaker vote didn't come up till, I guess, end of 2010 after the next election. And the speaker's elected by the body every 2 years, correct?
Right.
That's not every year vote anyway. So, you know, that was an unimportant statement in the reality of, I mean, the perception of it was big, but then the reality of it isn't. But then the 5th District, if you go to leftinalabama.com, there's a lot of talk. And, of course, you know, Mooncat, Sherry's one of our good friends that comes on a lot to the show, but there's a lot of information on her blog. They give you a map, and it includes cities like Huntsville, Decatur, Florence, Scottsboro. Basically goes from Georgia to Mississippi, across the, you know, top of the state. I don't think it goes more than two counties thick, the whole thing. I mean, it's just the entire Tennessee border, that part of the state. And if you look at it, it's pretty compact as far as, you don't have to go much north and south. But if you look, they actually have some candidates they think are going to run. And Susan Parker, who was a public service commissioner from that area of Alabama and actually was the nominee against Jeff Sessions for Senate a few years ago, about 4 years ago, she's looking long and hard at the race, and she has nothing to risk. And then I've also heard about Roy Sparks possibly moving out of the governor's race and into this House race. Those are two candidates. Also, Deborah Bell Passour, which I believe is on the Court of Appeals, her also looking at that race. What do y'all think of these, you know, these three candidates? Catherine, any thoughts on any of the three of them?
I haven't taken a look at much of that, so sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I know you know about Ron Sparks and some of the things. Like, I remember he was the candidate that said that Artur Davis, his opponent in their Democratic primary, should support the health care bill. So, I mean, he's kind of on record.
Oh, right, yeah.
Statewide race, he's on record kind of having a more progressive position on national politics.
It would be nice if one of these heavyweights would move forward to run in this race immediately, if for no other reason, to send this guy a message that we're not just going to roll over and let him do whatever he wants to do. If he wants to switch, fine. Good. Let's make him pay for it.
Yeah, and really, one thing that would make this interesting is the fact that if you look at it, the Democratic Party, the Democratic activists nationwide are going to give a lot of support to this district. Imagine the money you can pay nationally on the blogosphere and whatnot getting this party switcher. I mean, the guy that was going to run against Joe Wilson raised a lot of money on what Joe Wilson said. Well, switching parties, even though, you know, symbolically what Joe Wilson did may be a better money raiser, in actual action, this is a better money raiser, if you will. So if one candidate stepped up and it was clear who was going to run, you could really raise a lot of money. Now, of course, it has to be a credible candidate. It can't just be, you know, some person. That's not going to get it. So all these three candidates seem pretty credible.
That's why one of these three people is so important. And if you if anybody out there listening wants to know, you can go to Swing State, and they've got a listing either there or on electoralvote.com as well of fundraising numbers. And the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is awash in money. So not only the fundraising nation could jump into this thing, but the National Party could jump into this thing in a big way too and make this a test district. I don't think Parker Griffith's going to have an easy road to hold next year.
And that's in the general. Now my bigger question, and I've been trying to at the same time, does he even get a clean field in the primary, or does some of these Republicans like Mo Brooks, who Madison County Commissioner, ex-state rep, ex-district attorney who ran for lieutenant governor in 2006, this guy's already filed to run against him, and he's still got his website going, and he actually has a press release reacting to him switching parties, and you know, maybe this guy decides to, you know, say, hey, look, I'm a real Republican. I've been with the party all this time, blah, blah, blah. You know, vote for me anyway. And does that resonate then with the Republicans in the primary?
I would think it would.
Yeah. Les Phillips. I don't think
well, let me ask you a question. Why should Republicans like party switchers any better than we do? That man is no more a genuine Republican than he is a genuine Democrat. What he's from is the party of Parker Griffith. He is interested in maintaining his political career. He's not an ideologue in any way. This man just is looking forward to the next election, and that's as far as he's looking. So if the Republicans have a choice between this guy and a guy that's always been a Republican, why wouldn't they vote for the genuine article?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's what's going to be interesting because, I mean, if you look at the litmus test and purity test and all that kind of thing that Republicans have put on their candidates, well, this guy could be in trouble and not even win his own primary. And if that's the case, then his party switching looks really stupid.
Amen.
Unless he may have made a deal.
But can the Republican Party, I know what you're saying, the Republican Party says, oh, we'll clean the field. Are they even able to do that anymore? I mean,
well,
think of any
good,
of their
that's a very
chosen
good point.
Candidates. I mean, you don't think that they wanted to clear the field for that lady up in New York?
Yeah.
didn't work.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, Charlie Crist, they were getting behind him, but obviously that's not working. In Kentucky, Trey Grayson, we're going to talk about that more. His field's surely not cleared. I just don't think the Republicans can hold that deal up anymore, and why would he be foolish enough to believe it?
No, there's a war of ideology going on in the Republican Party, guys, and the establishment rules right now do not apply because in the minds of these teabaggers and others, it's the Republican establishment that led their party to ruin. And if they perceive Parker Griffith as part of the establishment, they could very well turn on him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that he has this one set of calculations based on, say, 1994, 1996 party switching, and it's just a new day in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
This is going to be one of the test cases, if you will, for the new, you know, political dynamics, and what happens to him will tell it. I mean, and maybe it'll be that, you know, he cruises to re-election, and we'll see that's part of the new dynamics, but it very well might not be the case, and it may be that he doesn't even get out of his own primary, but then it may be that the district is still very Republican, like some of the numbers show. I don't know, but it's going to be something to watch, and, you know, we'll continue to follow it along with other things. But I guess we're right around the midpoint, and we talked about year-end awards, and, of course, we have predictions for next year, but let's go with the year-end awards. And some of these, they can be real serious or they can be kind of whimsical. And the first one I kind of wanted to think about was political nicknames. And, you know, we've seen a lot of, you know, in Georgia with Buddies and Sonnies and things like that where people do to extend their names. But I was looking at the article recently that had the new Marietta mayor. And his nickname, and he's former state rep, is Thunder. Steve Thunder Tumlin, and I just thought that was like one of the worst political nicknames I've ever seen. Because really, I mean, I would expect it to show up on pro wrestling before I would a ballot. You know, I mean, like if he goes to the ring, I mean, I kind of want him to run on a ticketed race so he can run with lightning, you know, thunder and lightning. I but I thought that, man, that is the worst political nickname I've ever seen. What are some awards some of y'all have? Catherine, anything that came to mind?
I don't know what to call it, but I'd like to give David Poitras an award for, what's the word? Like a dog that won't give up a toy. Just cannot give up on attacking Roy Barnes, and I think it's real. I like the guy, and I wish that he had another tactic for his another strategy for his campaign. Because I've grown very tired of it, and so whatever that is, whatever that's called, I award it to him. I'll think of it while we're talking. But.
Well, you awarded that, but, of course, Thurbert Baker and probably DeBose Porter are like, keep going with it because, you know, that means we don't have to and we can still get the taxi in. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know what you're saying. I mean, it can get a little old at times, those kind of tactics. I mean, you just got to have a plan, if you will, and do what you're doing.
I wouldn't have as much trouble with it if we heard other things, more other stuff from him, too. But it's like every time I get an email, every time I hear anything about him, he's talking about Roy Barnes.
You're right, Catherine, because after a while it looks like, hey, I'm attacking him because he's the front runner in the polls.
And we don't know. I mean, at the beginning we knew a little bit more about him and what he stood for, but he's lost a lot of that, and all it is that I'm not Roy Barnes. There's a lot of people I can vote for who aren't Roy Barnes. So I don't know. And like I said, I like the guy. I think he started out, he was appealing, but I think he's certainly lost his appeal for me because of that strategy. Let me keep thinking.
Tim,
I have some notes here. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay, well, let me get a little cute here. I'm going to call this the "That Was No Lady, That Was My Soulmate" award, and it's going to be shared this year by Governor Sanford and Glenn Richardson. Do you guys love that or what?
Well, that's a good one. I mean, and it fits. I mean, it's really, I mean, Glenn Richardson didn't get the attention nationally that he probably should have with what his ex-wife claimed.
But it sent an earthquake politically through this state where none existed before. The Republican Party was, you know, all set for a big victory next year. Then all of a sudden this thing hits them right in the face. And suddenly the Republican Party don't look as invincible as it once did.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, we'll
just because Glenn Richardson couldn't leave women alone.
Yeah,
well, and also because he couldn't, he had to threaten his wife, and he couldn't leave his wife alone either. He couldn't stand for her to be to leave him and go out and, you know, explore a new life. So he had to threaten her, which again, I'm going to say it forever, over and over, is a much worse indictment on him than fooling around. Much worse.
You don't want to stay with your wife, but then you don't want her to have a life either.
What he didn't bank on, though, was her using the power of the news media to even the score. And, buddy, she did. Not only with him, but the whole party in which he served. She nailed them with one little interview on Channel 5. Simply amazing. Maybe she should be the big political award winner in Georgia this year.
I'm sure somebody could come up with an award for that. Well, my next award is going to be the Plan Your Work, Work Your Plan Award. And it's got to go to Mayor-elect Kasim Reed, because this is a guy that, you know, late summer, like August, he was running third in the polls. Maybe there was even a poll later than that. And, you know, people probably may have to wonder, you know, what's this guy doing? And this guy, he had a plan laid out. He got his team together, and he knew when to peak. And, you know, one of the better political races I've seen run in a while. Never really had to get dirty to do it either. I mean, he just kind of peaked in a very mayoral doesn't seem good enough, but a very statesman-like way. So that he gets that award. Catherine, back to you.
I don't have anything. I can't think. I'm not good at this kind of thing. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, that I will give you a pass. We kind of threw this on today. So, Tim, what you got?
Yeah, I got one more funny one. This one is called "I'm a Real Big Man" award, and I've got to give this one, David, to Joe Lieberman. He just showed us all what a major player he thinks he is. You know what I mean, buddy? He held up the whole shooting match on health care and pretty much by himself gutted the bill because of that ridiculous filibuster nonsense in the Senate. And Mr. Independent Lieberman is my choice for the really big man of the year award.
Yeah, and I just saw on, as I was checking, I think on PoliticalWire, his approval rating in Connecticut has gone from 41% to 30%.
So, yeah, he has a negative approval rating for the first time ever.
Yeah, I wish
as a senator.
I wish he was up this time, but that's a few more years. But this may be old Joe's last term.
Yeah,
no
doubt.
If it's going that way, and good riddance. I've never really been a fan. I thought Al Gore. That was one of the big mistakes he made, was picking that guy as his running mate.
Yeah,
I have to agree with you.
He could have picked Bob Graham or been Bill Nelson and won Florida and been the president instead of old Joe there. But I do have some more awards, and I am going to go to Florida for the next one. And I'm not going to give this guy the Man of the People Award, but I'm going to give this guy the Man of His People Award, meaning conservative Republicans. And that goes to Marco Rubio. I mean, is anybody more popular with the base of their party than this guy? Can y'all think of somebody? I mean,
unless it's Sarah Palin, yeah.
Yeah, but the hardcore Florida Republicans love this guy, and he is just riding away, but he is the man of his people. And I think he gets that award. And, Tim, did you say that was your final award, or you got more?
You know, I was going to do one more, and I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway, even though you've already named the guy. My political person of the year award, this is serious, in the state of Georgia, has to be Kasim Reed. You've already said it, David. The man came out of nowhere. A year ago, he was at 3% in the polls. When he announced he was running, I thought, well, that's nice, but Lord, why? There's no way. And he persevered. He ran an excellent campaign. He showed that he is an articulate, energized kind of guy. And I wish Mayor-elect Reed very well in what's going to be a pretty tough job for him. But I believe this guy's up to it. Political Person of the Year in Georgia, Kasim Reed.
Yes, and my final award is going to be the Love It or Leave It Award. And that's going to go to Rick Perry, governor of Texas, who doesn't seem to love America anymore. And, of course, he doesn't want to leave it. He wants the whole state of Texas to leave it. But, of course, he can't have Texas because that's part of America. But this one's actually going to come with not a cash prize, but a physical prize. Hopefully on the Rio Grande River between, you know, America and Mexico, there's one of those little islands. You know, sometimes in lakes and rivers, there's just little, you know, sandbar islands that form. Maybe he could just live on that spot that's kind of in a no country exactly at all. I know they've probably figured out which country it's in, but he could live in that, and that could be his own little world he could rule over, along with the one in his head, since he seems to be kind of a delusional character as of late. But that goes to Governor Rick Perry. I guess we could also give Governor Rick, you've been on the stage too long, but people of Texas, to award to him, hopefully in March or November, whichever the case may be. But I guess that's our year-end awards for 2009. You know, it wasn't a bad little segment, but we'll kind of segue over now to Kentucky politics. And I know y'all talked Kentucky politics in detail a few weeks without me, but public policy polling came out with a poll on the 22nd, I believe it was, and it shows that Republicans are riding pretty high. They had previously done a poll in, I guess it was April, been a little while, that showed Jack Conway leading Trey Grayson. It showed Trey Grayson leading the Lieutenant Governor Dan, though, Dr. Dan. And then, of course, Rand Paul was not even polled. Well, they polled all four of those folks in different combinations. And it shows the Republicans winning any of those matchups. And they win those matchups anywhere between 6 and 9 points. How much trouble you think this spells, Tim?
when the guys from Kentucky were on, they had indicated that the in-house stuff they were seeing up there, this was before the public policy polling, indicated that either Grayson or Rand Paul would beat either of the Democrats, although it was felt by them that Conway would probably be the stronger of the two Democratic candidates. The thing that stunned me, and Catherine, I know you remember this, it just stopped me in my tracks. They said if the election were held today that Rand Paul would be the Republican nominee.
Yeah, they were very clear about that.
And they said this guy is pulling mainstream Republican voters in now, and it's kind of a backlash at Mitch McConnell, who, number one, is perceived by Kentucky Republicans as being a weak minority leader, and number two, and this thought never crossed my mind, but a lot of Kentucky conservatives did not like the way that McConnell treated Jim Bunning when he forced him out of the race. Is that what you got from them, Catherine?
Yes, absolutely. They didn't like that. They said a couple times that they thought the citizens of Kentucky should have a voice, and that McConnell was trying to take that away.
Bottom line, David, is we've got a political earthquake building in Kentucky on the Republican side. If Rand Paul, who was looked at as a joke just a couple of months ago, suddenly, and there again, Grayson is one of these establishment candidates that everybody wanted to get Bunning out of the way. Well, here comes Rand Paul out of nowhere. And Grayson's got a problem.
Yeah, I will say this. Grayson does run better against Democrats than Rand Paul, so maybe that's something he can spin to his advantage. And it does look of the two Democratic candidates if Jack Conway runs better.
Those numbers, Grayson was running a whole lot better against the Democrats than was Rand Paul. Those numbers are not so far apart now. I'm looking down through here where, say, Grayson beats Lieutenant Governor Mangiardo by 9 points, Paul beats him by 6. Those numbers are not so different anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul has made a race of this thing.
Yeah.
And his fundraising, see, he's got his father's penchant for fundraising. He's awash in money, so look out.
Yeah, and I will say this, some interesting numbers here. In the poll, I'm looking at page one, Kentucky, but you have to go to the second page as of right now. Grayson and Paul win anywhere between 69 and 75% of Kentucky Republicans, whereas Conway and Dr. Dan win anywhere between 54 and 61 of the Democratic vote. I can't imagine what scenario that a Democratic office holder only wins 54% of the Democratic vote against a Republican. That's interesting to see, but they also
Here's another thing. Paul has 49% name recognition already. And that's because of his father, I would imagine, wouldn't you?
He may be starting to get those, or for the last few weeks he may have been getting these hot new face, look what's happening kind of stories that will boost his name ID. You know, you kind of get this underground network going, and then people start noticing the underground network gets to something, and then you get the mainstream press and notices just about getting hot, if you will, and that may be where some of that name ID picks up from. They did have a few other approval numbers. Barack Obama's approval in Kentucky, 35% disapproval, 59%. Now, of course, Kentucky was one of those states, there were like three or four of them, where he actually did worse than John Kerry. So his numbers are pretty low there. Health care reform, 28% support health care reform, 62% oppose. And this is in a state, you know, eastern Kentucky, Appalachia. I mean, that's an area that really could use some health care reform, you would think. Yet it's not as popular. Jim Bunning's approval, now it's horrible. 29% approve, 44 disapprove. You'd almost think that there'd be like he's retiring, but he's old, he may be senile. People feel sorry for him, but no such luck. His numbers are the worst of anything or anybody in the poll. And then the final one, Mitch McConnell still has a positive approval rating. 48 approve, 41 disapprove. Interesting.
48. That's not nothing to write home about there.
It's
48%.
Nothing to be proud of. 41 disapprove. That is a high number. But in compared to the president, health care reform, and Jim Bunning, it's the best of those ratings. And then of the candidates, none of them are seem to be as known. Everybody has not sure as a third or more. I mean, I love how 63% of the people of Kentucky are not sure how they feel about their attorney general. 64% of the people of Kentucky are not sure how they feel about their Secretary of State. And 38% are not sure how they feel about Lieutenant Governor. I'm surprised his numbers aren't actually higher, since really Lieutenant Governors do even less than the other two offices. And people are actually more sure about how they feel about Rand Paul's numbers. He actually has 51% not sure. I think it's kind of funny. He holds no office, and people have more of an opinion of him than two pretty key elected officials in the state, for what that's worth. Well, speaking of health care reform, nevertheless, even the irregardless of the feelings of the people of Kentucky, it passed. It passed a big stage. I believe it already passed the House. Now it's passed the Senate. They just have to put the bill in conference and go from there. Catherine, what have you heard so far?
Well, the interesting development that I heard was that on Christmas Eve, Governor Sanford of South Carolina wrote a letter to Congressman Clyburn, a very long, elaborate letter saying, you know, we are not in favor. We, I guess, meaning the people of the state of South Carolina, are not in favor of health care reform. But if we're going to have it, we want the sweetheart deal that Nebraska got. Facing, you know, very high unemployment, and this bill is going to bankrupt us, and the way it stands now, it's going to hurt our state. So, you know, we want you to try to get us a sweetheart deal. Like, they're all claiming that these special sweetheart deals are unconstitutional. But I thought it was really, you know, I'm always interested when, you know, they step forward and say, well, we're not in favor of it, but if it's going to pass, we want the sweetheart deal too. But I thought it was interesting that it was on Christmas Eve, and the letter was full of, you know, we wish you and your family and yours a great holiday season and blah, blah, blah. But, by the way, we want this, you know, cut us a break.
Yeah, I have heard a lot of pundits say, you know, like, the Democratic Party has to pass health care reform for the midterm election so they can say, like, you know, we had a big goal, we accomplished our goal. Now what I'm going to be more interested to see and hear is what actually does the bill have? What's the meat of it? Because, of course, you heard, the different, like, the Max Baucus provisions. And, they, you know, that almost honestly sounded to the where it sounded like a giveaway to the healthcare industry, and you're like, is that even worth having? I mean, is that in there? I mean, what's really there? Are there triggers to where states can opt in and opt out? And is it Medicare at a certain age? I mean, you've heard all these different plans, and so I've never actually heard what got passed yet, because it did pass in the middle of the holiday. I mean, I'm, you know, not stopping family stuff to, you know, watch the world news on Christmas Eve. You know, I mean, Tim, I know you haven't been getting out and about in the last few days because of your health concerns, but what have you heard?
Well, they did pass something. But I didn't like the Senate bill. I'm going to be honest about it. It looks like a bill just to pass the bill.
Yeah.
The public option is gone. The Medicare provision is gone. Who makes out like a bandit in this Senate bill, unfortunately, are the insurance companies who now are looking at a possible pool of 31 million new customers because the mandating provisions are still in there, that everyone's going to have health care or health insurance, and that's going to kick in 5 years. We need something much stronger. And if there's no public option in the final bill, then I'd rather have no bill. And I don't see that they're going to have to work their differences out with the House now. And these bills are like Venus and Earth. They are totally different. The only way I think they're going to come to a consensus to get the sacred 60 votes in the Senate is essentially to gut the House bill, which did have things like the public option in it. But if you get rid of the public option, what do you really have?
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of the Baucus bill, which you're right, it just sounded like give the healthcare industry, you know, force them to have, you know, more customers without much positive on the other end.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and I don't know what the provisions in the lower healthcare costs will be.
I'm not saying there's not some good things in it, like pre-existing conditions may become a thing of the past. That's good. People cannot be denied a test because it's too expensive under this new bill. So there are some good things in it. But still, we should have went all the way with this thing, guys.
Yeah, I think that what this bill ends up being is really beneficial to the health insurance companies.
Right.
But it may also be beneficial to people, but it's going to take a long time, you know, to regular, ordinary citizens. It may take a long time to recognize those benefits. I think that ultimately with all those new the new requirements for people to have insurance will probably lower rates over the next couple of years. But in the meantime, the insurance companies are going to be raking in the dough. And I'm not sure people are going to be that happy about that. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think that those are the kind of things that progressives and Democrats were hoping to curtail to some extent. And I'm not sure that this bill really, it isn't, I mean, there was a lot of talk about, well, it's not really health care reform, it's health insurance reform, but this isn't really even health insurance reform.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what you call it at this point.
Well, put me down as opposed to the Senate bill. Now, that's the bottom line. If they come out with a final bill that has no public option, then you can count me as among those opposed to this bill.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I still think it was execution of timing it. I mean, I've said this before. I really feel both President Obama and President Clinton tried to do health care reform too soon in their tenures while the economy was shaky, and you can use stronger language than that about the economy. And neither one of them was their fault. They came into a bad economy. But I think if President Clinton before would have waited till the economy was stronger, then did health care reform, he'd have gotten a lot more. Just like I think if President Obama could have gotten, you know, the jobs picture looking better. Maybe he doesn't do it till his first year of his second term or something. And maybe people don't have health care as long as they would, but when you actually got something, you would have gotten more, because then it's not the first thing you're doing. People say, oh, this guy's got a track record of success. We trust him. It's not like the unknown, if you will. And maybe, you know, maybe there's, you know, theories of saying, hey, we weren't going to hold this big majority for very long, no matter what, so we had to do it soon. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it, but I think if, you know, you have a, you know, more of a mandate,
you're right. And I'll tell you why. The bottom line is people don't want to hear about health care reform if they're not working. They don't want to hear about Afghanistan, Iraq, what's going on with China, what's going on with climate change. The first priority of any president should be to ensure that anybody who wants a job has one. The economy was the overriding issue in the last presidential election. It became a referendum on President Bush and the Republicans' handling of the economy, and it propelled Barack Obama to a historic victory. Had I been he, and of course I'm not setting myself up to be him or anybody else in that administration, but I think I would have focused like a laser beam.
Yeah, I mean,
hold on a minute, though. There's a lot of people who believe that health care is actually the biggest economic problem we have in this country. That as we go forward with the baby boomers aging out, and that health care is going to be an economic nightmare, the likes of which we have not seen. So I think what I think they did was there were a couple opportunities they had to emphasize those the economic and the entrepreneurial point of healthcare reform, and they didn't do that. They talked a lot about fairness and a lot about insurance companies making too much money, and I think that they miss. I mean, who am I to say? You know, I'm sure you know they have much better advisors than me, but I think if they had focused more on the how health insurance and lack of health insurance stops entrepreneurship in this country, because it does, there's no question about that, and the coming financial woes facing us because of healthcare, I think they would have had a much better argument than the. I mean, I don't disagree with the argument that they used, but I don't think it was as effective as it could have been.
Well, and yeah. I think we've also talked about this. If they would have said, look, it's hard to compete in the world stage when American businesses have all this health care cost and Japanese and European businesses don't have to pay that because the government pays it and businesses aren't free enterprises, not saddled with that, I think that could have appealed to some people. So there is some framing. If they're going to do it, there's some differences in framing. I also think they should have said, look, this is our bill. This is what we want, not all this garbage you're trying to put into it,
yep.
And kind of said our way or the highway to a point. I mean, so we're going to get, you know, 80% of this, or it's not going to be a little tougher. But, I mean, but that's what I mean. But as there's no jobs and people pick away at that, that hurts that strong stance. Well, I guess
another problem the president had, if you recall, he actually proposed no bill of his own. He left it up to Congress to write the bill. I believe, in hindsight, it would have been much better for the administration to say, okay, here's what we want, a single-payer system, go all the way with it. And I tell you what, by the end of the process, the public option would have been what they would have agreed on, probably.
Yeah, and if you're afraid, oh, the Republicans will say you're going too far, honestly, if they would have, you know, giving away 10 free Band-Aids to every home in America, there's a lot of Republicans that would call it socialized medicine anyway.
Let them
no
call
fear
it
anyway. I know. I mean, there's no fear with that kind of stuff. Well, guys, we got you know, like 30 seconds left in the show. We can do predictions quick, or we can do them first thing in the new year. I'm going to let y'all make the call.
I'd rather do them first thing in the new year because we only have like a minute left.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, then, I guess if anything that you're going to predict happens between now and, say, the 3rd, I think, is our first show, then I guess you just couldn't be Nostradamus.
There we go.
But considering that our Iron Man of the show, Tim Shiflett, was not at full capacity, I think we had a great show.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, well, I'll see y'all in 2010.
Okay, Happy New Year, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Good night.